Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today, I'm really fortunate to have a special guest on. We're living in interesting times, as we always say, and as Americans, I've never experienced anything like this, and I'm sure if not all, at least most of my listeners haven't either. And if you turn on the TV or the radio, it seems like chaos is happening. But one of the things that we have is control over how we experience it. And I think if you're prepared, you're able to withstand a lot of doubt and you're able to navigate with intention instead of fear. And today I wanted to have somebody on who is an expert in this, somebody who's thought about the future, somebody who can help us navigate. And he has a wealth of knowledge. This is Mr. Donegan Kaiser. He's the CEO and founder of Liberty and Finance, and he's built a 35-year engineering career with Fortune 100 companies solving impossible challenges in extreme material handling, industrial automation, and applied physical sciences. He's been endorsed as a thought leader in independent media, as the host of the Liberty and Finance Reluctant Preppers channel since 2013, where he brings together leading experts from the fields of precious metals, mining finance, constitutional liberty, and preparedness to benefit a growing audience of over 46,000 passionate subscribers who have amassed over 8 million views. He holds degrees in physics and computer sciences. And I think this is somebody who can speak with knowledge. And I'm so proud and happy to have you on today, Mr. Kaiser. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, it's an honor to me, Dr. George, for you inviting me. I'm always glad to be with you.
Well, thank you. You know, I wanted to give your resume because I wanted people to understand that you don't have to depend on somebody to tell you how to think or how to feel. And I think you're really an example of someone who's taken their power back and is kind enough to share your knowledge with people who aren't as far along as you are. So how did you start off? How did you make that change to not letting something happen to you, but being in control of your life?
Well, I wouldn't want to make that leap of saying I'm in control of my life. I think that we're in control of our own thoughts, words, and actions, if that's what you mean.
And I do.
Yeah, okay. It's actually quite interesting. As a homeschool parent of five children, my wife and I homeschooled all five of ours. And our last child actually asked a rather innocent question. He said, "Dad, where does money come from? And how does it get its value? And who gets the right to make it? And who do they give it to?" And all that sort of thing. So I did what I often did as a homeschool dad and said, "Hey, why don't you do a research report about that? And then we'll talk about it." And he came back to me. This is a brilliant, brilliant young man. He came back to me several weeks later, just befuddled. He said, "Dad, this isn't making any sense." I said, "I'm sure it makes sense. Why don't you show me what you got?" And he showed it to me, and it didn't make sense to me either. So he plowed in deeper and deeper and deeper. And both of us kind of went down the rabbit hole and found out that there's a lot of very unanswered questions that we thought we had never been taught about. And I realized we were much more vulnerable than I wanted to believe and to accept. And once I realized that, I guess it probably because it just comes naturally to me. And I think part of that is because both my parents were missionaries, is that once we had this information, I thought, I can't sit on this. I can't sit still. I've got to let this out. People don't know this and they need to know this stuff. So we started publishing on YouTube. And again, I was realizing I wasn't the expert at that time. And so I had to rely on and was able to gratefully rely on many, many experts in different fields of related to preparedness and personal risk and liberty and that sort of thing to come on and answer questions. And I often ask for questions on behalf of the viewing audience and ask them to submit questions so I can really be there in the place of and as a representative of all of us to see if we can get the information that's going to be necessary to help our families.
Well, from the studies that you've done, is there, from an average person, what is the first thing you think people need to do to start that process? Because I think people are unsure, uncertain, but they just don't know how to begin. And I think it's overwhelming.
Yes.
If you try to eat it all at the same time. So how would you counsel someone who's, they have a question, they don't know who to go to, how should they start?
I don't know that there's any one correct starting place, but I would say a good starting place is to get down to basics and keep it very simple at first. One of the things to realize right off the bat is that if you're only plugged into what I would call mainstream sources of information, like the major television channels, that sort of thing, you're not getting most of what you need to know to truly be prepared for what's coming. So, or even what's going on right now, what's already been happening to your finances and to your life and that sort of thing. So that's one thing, is to just open up, be open to non-mainstream sources of information. Another thing is to think about basics like air, water, food, mobility, energy, heat, light, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Ben, if you just break it down to the very most basic things that you need the most to get through a day or a week, and think, what would I do if my normal sources for those things were interrupted for any reason, a natural disaster or anything? And then think, what is an alternate? What's a plan B? And just play a thought experiment with yourself. If it helps, if you have a spouse or children or somebody to bounce those ideas off of, and you can start thinking of, well, this could be an alternative. And then you have a plan B, and then take a little small action step. Mm-hmm. As an engineer, we often are taught to use the Pareto principle, which is just a way of prioritizing, putting first things first. So if you jot down a list of maybe half a dozen things that come to mind when you think of the most basic things that your family needs to get through a healthy week, and then rank those in order of which would be the most concerning to you if it were interrupted. And for us, you know, living in a rather cold place, it would be heat in the winter or things like that. And then you write down, for that thing that's the most concerning to you, what is a possible plan B, and what's one small thing I could do to mitigate or to reduce that risk? There are some books that are good starting places. I would suggest an author by the name of Arthur T. Bradley, Dr. Arthur T. Bradley. He's got a wide variety of books you can find out on Amazon that are about preparedness for families. That's a good place to start too.
That's excellent, excellent information. I think that's the last, when you're comfortable, that's the time you need to start looking at things. And I think the COVID crisis has been a wake-up call. Remember toilet paper and Lysol, things that you wouldn't even take a second thought about. This was the major players, you know, but now people have, I hope, the mindset of you want to prepare so you're not out there trying to scrape and fight to get what you want. And we're going to take a break in a minute or so, but just to tee up the next section, is there a checklist? I mean, should you have a certain amount of food or water based on months, or is there any kind of algorithm you can use from that standpoint?
Sure. It always makes the most sense when you're planning like an emergency list or a packing list, that sort of thing, is to think in terms of time capsules. It's like, how would we get through one day? How would mm-hmm. we get through a week? How would we get through a month? That's a good place to start. And in fact, in that little list I was talking about earlier, if you just list the basic things of life that you need and you rank them in order, say, from 1 to 10, just the top 10 things that come to mind, and then make 3 columns, one for what would be a workaround for a day, for a week, or for a month. That helps to structure your thinking about that.
I got you. And before we're going to take a break and come back, I just want to get your feeling about the things that aren't essential, like the things that you need to survive past food and water. So let's take our first break. You're Living in the Solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Dunnigan Kaiser. And before the break, we were talking about things that you can do now, lists and your things that you need to survive as a family. And I assume that when you make your list, you're making it per every member of your household, right? So a daily supply for every single member, pets, et cetera. So
absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, I've heard of things that you can buy over online, foods that don't perish, water, ways that you can save your supply, you know, like you can stack them or stock them so they're ready to go. Is there anything that you can recommend in terms of food supply or other things that websites that people can go to and buy it already kind of ready to go for them?
Yeah, absolutely. Most major online retailers, whether it's Costco or Walmart or any of those large retailers, you can buy these buckets of, they're like a 30 pound or 15 pound pail that's sealed, and inside there's like typically Mylar or foil pouches of dehydrated food, that sort of thing. Some of those things have a 25 or 30 year shelf life, so you don't feel bad not using it. I mean, but there's even a simpler approach than that, is to just take that incremental approach. And when you go into the grocery store or wherever, farmer's market, or wherever you purchase your things, if you find some foodstuffs that you normally would use and normally like and your family would use, then just get a little bit extra and rotate by putting the new ones in the back and keep an eye on your pantry. But just by slowly building up a little bit extra, so that you start to have more and more of a backlog of things that are both nutritious and that your family would actually use. Because that's a terrible waste of funds to stock up on things like all have the same freshness date, and then suddenly that day comes, you got to throw everything away or whatever. So it's helpful to take that incremental approach. There's another aspect to that that's important, is the psychological aspect, is just making things a habit. My wife and I had accumulated slowly over time paper towels, toilet paper, bottled water, Kleenex, and a number of different canned meats like tuna, that sort of thing, different things like that. And because we never did it in a huge amount, it was never too disruptive, or we weren't depriving our friends and neighbors at the grocery store. We weren't running the shelves bare. We were just building up over time. And you can do that over a period of a month or two. You can build up quite a surplus of things in your pantry that will really help you to know that in the case of an interruption in supply, you at least are going to have plenty of those basics to get through.
You know, what I never think about is things that require refrigeration. I've seen people stock up on milk and other things that you need, like meat and that sort of thing. And when you think about a situation where you don't have electricity, that could all go to waste, couldn't it?
Absolutely. That's a very common plight that people have when the power goes out, is suddenly everything in the freezer, you've got basically a day or two to use it up. And that's really a distressing time on top of an emergency situation. So it's very helpful when you're doing your brainstorming with your list, is to think in terms of things that are shelf stable, things that don't take refrigeration, maybe things that don't even take heat or energy or fuel source to make them usable for eating, things that can just be, that can be used as they are. Mm-hmm. And that's a much more practical way to just keep things simple for you going forward. There's a little memory rule called the rule of three that can be helpful when you're thinking through this. The idea that we're really quite vulnerable, for example, 3 minutes without air, I mean, this is, as a doctor, you can say, yeah, and 3 hours in severe outdoor conditions without shelter, for example, or 3 days without water, or 3 weeks without food. So those are some things that help kind of structure your thinking about this. You can also look at the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's like a pyramid from the bottom up, where the bottom is like, if you don't have that, you're not even worried about the next layer. So like that, in from a preparedness standpoint, that bottom layer being safety and security and shelter, is like, if you don't have safety and security, if you're actually feeling directly under attack, you're not worried about the other layers above that in the hierarchy. So what do you need to do to improve the resilience and robustness of your plans around safety and security? And then shelter is above that. And then above that is starting to get to be like some of these things like water and food and on up and communication and being able to reach out to family members. What would you do if the self system stopped working? Is it, do you have a plan? So much of this ends up being not so much about having things as having thought through plans and strategies and kind of having a plan with your family members, so that they know and you know where people would go if there was this kind of a situation. And some people have been doing this for a long, long time as families. You know, if you're traveling together and you're out in some very strange place, you go, okay, if we get separated, people, we're going to meet over there at that one big landmark. Okay, everybody knows that's the plan. That's plan B. Mm-hmm. So doing that kind of planning and having those conversations around the dinner table is something that has maybe been a lost art that you can rekindle in your family and talking through different eventualities and different options that you have. There will be some things that you decide, you know, we really need to obtain this, or we might need to even change something about our living situation in order to have, we may need to start cultivating a garden. We may need to move to a neighborhood where there isn't an HOA that says you can't have gardens. So mm-hmm. sometimes the impact on, we may need to stop living in a 15th floor apartment in a big city, rather than maybe we better get out on a few acres outside the city so that we can have chickens or that sort of thing. Those are some of the things those are big steps, but there's usually some really close at hand steps that you can take that are much easier to enact within just a few days or a week with your family.
I think you bring up a really good point about the preparing before stuff happens, to have a group, whether that's family, if you live in the city, maybe your neighbors that you can trust, because I think when stuff hits the fan, you have to know who you can depend on, and you don't want to be the beacon that everybody else didn't prepare and they know you did and they come for you. I mean, there's some element of that you have to watch out for, isn't there?
Right. There's a principle about what they call being the gray man, or being, you know, keeping a low profile. This is a balancing act, right? Because you want out of charity, out of, you know, and if you're a Christian, out of Christian charity, to be a source of help to your neighbor. You want that. At the mm-hmm. same time, it's just like when you're being a lifeguard at a pool, or rescuing someone from water, or entering a confined space if there's someone having trouble who's collapsed, who's passed out because there's bad air down in the place. It's not always, if you just rush into the problem area, you might become a casualty as well. And then you're no good to anyone. So just like when you take an airline flight and it says, remember to apply your own air mask before assisting others. It's like, you've got to make sure that you maintain your health and wellness and equilibrium, or you'll be unable to help others. So you don't want to overdo it, and sometimes becoming too conspicuous about your preparedness. If you talk a lot about it, or if you, you know, everybody in your neighborhood knows you're the one who has everything, that's mm-hmm. not necessarily going to be the most helpful to everybody. It would be good maybe to start a neighborhood special interest group to talk about what are some options we can all think about increasing the preparedness of our families, and how we would help each other as a neighborhood, that kind of thing. That might be a better way to start, rather than just talking a lot at work or among acquaintances about how much stuff you have or these things you're purchasing.
I think that's a great point. And you mentioned about being able to communicate. You know, if the Wi-Fi goes down, or the telephone signal for your cell service goes down, is there a way that people can actually communicate with each other? Is there something off the grid, you know, that would help? I know there's things like Signal, but that requires that you have a cell phone service.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good exercise to go through. Some people maintained, even when they got their cell phones, they maintained a landline for their household because it's a completely separate system. Many people have let their landlines go by the wayside because it was twice, you know, they're trying to save on monthly expenses. There's also, it depends how far away your group or your family members are likely to be. If you're all in the same town, then there are two-way radios that you can purchase, some really good quality ones that could have miles of range. And that would be a good option to have on hand for those who are nearby. If you have family members or others who are in, you need to be able to reach in case of a general interruption in communication. There are shortwave radios or ham radios. That takes more. You have to get, you know, equipment. You got to get some training. You got to get licensed. So there's some big hurdles there. But just a little step of getting family radio, two-way walkie-talkies that are these special high range ones that are available. You can order those online. There's a website called survivalblog.net, and they do a good job of reviewing and recommending which ones are the best ones, still affordable for people to consider.
That's good to know. I mean, communication is key, and knowing, having like a plan so that you don't freak out. I mean, to me, it seems it's half of the battle is your mind, that you can calm yourself, think clearly, almost like you're going through the motions of having a plan. You know, when we were in school and I was in grade school, we'd have fire alarm, fire drills. And we'd all know if you hear that, this is what you do. You don't even question it. You just knew how to get out of the location. Do you recommend that people actually go through dry runs so they can kind of, you know, put it into motion?
At least you can talk through a dry run. You don't necessarily have to actually exercise it. That's ideal. If you can actually try your plan, you'll discover all kinds of things that we forgot. Oh yeah, it isn't enough just to grab this backpack with stuff. I left my whatever, my spare keys at home or whatever it is. Sometimes you'll discover by trying something where the holes are in your plan, but you'll be miles ahead of where you would have been if you at least go through the exercise of talking it through and thinking it through out loud together. And the very fact that you did that conversation and that you may have that conversation about different topics at different times on a recurring basis gets people's minds thinking. And then in a moment of panic, you're absolutely right. What I shouldn't have said a moment of panic, what I should have said is a moment of urgent need. You won't panic because your mind will return to those habits that you've formed, those thought patterns, and you'll go back into your mind to what would we have said we would do in a case like this, and I know what to do. And it's typically those who take direct, purposeful action early in situations that do much better than those who, it's quite easy to get a bit paralyzed by just sort of worrying and frantically moving around, and that's not moving you closer to what you need to do to take care of yourself and your family.
That's a good point. You know, I really think, you know, it's not something that I came to, but I think all of the things that's happened in the country over the past 2 and 3 years, but really recently, and living in a city, you really start to consider, you know, what, one, should you be in the city? That would be number one. Mm-hmm. But two, what do you need to do to hunker down or make your move? And I guess that's another thing. You just made we have a minute before the break, but you mentioned something that's interesting. You have to make your decision early, right? Is there some sort of golden time that if you have to get in the car and get out of Dodge, that you need to do it in a particular, you know, any signal that you can think of that, okay, it's time to make the move before it gets out of control?
Well, in general, the clue is to do that before the crowd decides to do that. You do not want to be in a herd or a mass or a crowd because that is typically going to be at least frustrating, stressful, and usually not successful. So generally, it's good enough to have thought things through ahead of time so that you can be an early responder, early adopter, and make your move before many others would have done so.
That's a good point. Well, let's go ahead and take our second break and come back. You're Living in the Solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Dunnigan Kaiser. He is the CEO and founder of Liberty and Finance. And you can go to his website, libertyandfinance.com. There's also a podcast by the same name, I believe. And also you can find him at Reluctant Preppers. Either way, you should be able to pick up his information. He's got a great YouTube site with wonderful guests that he's hosted with a lot of different topics, everything from gold and silver to, you know, how the financial system is running and how you can benefit or at least not get hurt in, I guess everything's a moving part at this point. And, you know, before the break, we were talking about when you're home and how you hunker down. I like to explore your opinion on where do you need to go if you have to leave the city? And I guess you're not going to be that's one of the things by leaving early. So you're not on the highway with everybody else, and back roads, I would think, are the way to go, and off road if you can do it, right?
Back roads are generally preferable because you're right. That's a good way to avoid the crowd that's going to be. And if there's going to be, heaven forbid, things like checkpoints and things like that, those are most likely going to be on major roads as well. Before we get into the thing about where to go, I would want to say that it's generally better to, if you can, to shelter in place. Almost always, unless you're absolutely in the path of something that is going to be unsurvivable, like truly, like a, you know, a tsunami or a major flood is really going to come, and it's really, or a huge wildfire is raging your way, then it's just foolhardy to stay right there. But other than those extreme situations, it may be by far best and simplest if you've already made preparations to make your home be someplace that is has some optionality. You have different ways you can cook food. You have non-perishable food. You have lamps or candles if the power goes out. You've got alternate sources of heat. You've thought those things through, and you're pretty well set up to just kind of hunker down in place through most ordinary type disruptions. It goes without saying that one important element when you talk about security and safety is you've got to make this decision for yourself, but having a means to protect and defend yourself and your home in all 50 states, you do not have a legal obligation to retreat from your domestic castle. If you're feeling threatened from, you know, something outside that's coming, you know, a hostile mob or something like that, you should be able to take refuge within your own house and not feel like that you have to abandon and leave your home and put yourself out into even more danger being exposed outside your home. But you should be able to keep yourself and your home safe from within. But if you do decide that it's better to leave, oh, and before we leave the example of a well-prepared home, my wife and I were able to visit Bermuda. We'd never been there before. And it's all I knew was from junior high and the Bermuda Triangle and everything disappears and the storms and that sort of thing. We got this lovely tour of the island, and the tour guide made the point that all of their houses there are constructed of limestone, and they have rainwater collection on the roof that goes into cisterns. And their official policy when a hurricane is approaching Bermuda is everyone just shelters in place in your own home. And their homes are built to withstand hurricanes, and they've got food and water. So if you set yourself up, think like a Bermudian and set your home up so that it's a place that would be worthy of sheltering in place for most emergency situations. But if you do need to leave, Joel Skousen from Strategic Relocation does a great job of talking about priorities. We've done some interviews with him. If people want to go to libertyandfinance.com or Reluctant Preppers YouTube channel and search Skousen, Skousen. His interviews talk about avoiding main roads, about knowing even from your location where all of the ways are to get out so that you don't have to cross over a major highway. Where are the underpasses that you can get out and get to a less populated area? That's the number one thing, is getting out of a more population dense area to a less population dense area. And, having some spare gasoline can that you could bring along so you get more range on your car, and keeping your tank on average more than half full. Don't let your car be on empty, because that inherently limits your ability to travel. You don't want to be the one waiting in line with the crowds to get gas so you can leave town so that you can get away from the crowds. Mm-hmm. So there's just simple things like that. Having what they call a go bag or a getaway bag packed with some basic medical supplies, things that toiletries for daily use, maybe even some of your prescriptions, some warm clothes, some different things you could pack into a go bag, water, snacks, etc., so that you could actually get out the door in a few minutes if you decided that was necessary, rather than frantically running around for hours trying to pull together the things you need to be able to leave. We had a situation in our neighborhood where we arrived home one evening and the neighbors were standing out in their front yards because there was a natural gas leak in our neighborhood. And we thought, you know what? I don't think we're going home. We're going to turn around and go the other direction. And we did. And we realized, you know, we need to go back and just get our go bag so that we could spend the night at a hotel if we need to, and not be back there where there's that concentration of natural gas, where there could be a fire or explosion. Mm-hmm. So it helps to have at least some things that simple ahead of time. One thing that we haven't really talked about is the financial aspect. And I wonder if we could
next. And that's fine. Let's talk about that, because you have to have a means to pay for things, or I assume barter becomes very popular in this kind of scenario.
Right. And if you've been in a situation where you've been maybe away from home or out and about, and you find that your card gets declined when you try to pay for something, and you go, well, what do I do now? It's really nice to have a plan B or a C in that case as well. And with our increased dependency on instantaneous electronic transactions everywhere we go, and we expect that to be just all of our life being on the phone or on the web, when that gets interrupted or there's no signal or something, there's a glitch in the system, the banking system is down or whatever, what is your plan B? So having some cash, some actual physical cash, can be extremely helpful in those kind of situations. if you want to keep more than probably what the average person would think normal to keep at home, that's probably prudent in the case if there, what would you do if you couldn't get at, for example, for a week or two, if the banking system was interrupted? And beyond paper cash or coins, a lot of our viewers have been very interested in, and that's how I got into sound money or real money, gold and silver, what was actually constitutional money by the U.S. Constitution and the Coinage Act of 1792. I mean, that's what the definition of the U.S. dollar is in terms of a number of grains of gold, of silver. So what we're accustomed to carrying around and calling dollars are not dollars. Those are Federal Reserve notes. Those are not dollars. The U.S. dollar is a number of grains of silver. And the point is that it's so easy now in the calm time to obtain what's called constitutional silver or junk silver, which is any dimes, quarters, or half dollars that were minted from 1964 or before. They're all 90% silver. And most of us who are of a certain age remember that they used to look different on the edge and they used to sound different. That's why the term, it rings true. If you ding a couple of those coins together, even drop one on a table, they make a ringing sound, not a clattering, clacking sound. So people have still not quite lost a memory of that there's something real about our money. And if you want, we could talk just for a minute about there's some real moral implications about that too.
Absolutely. I think we've gotten lax with fiat currency, and it's just become less valuable as we, you know, what we could buy when we were younger. Yeah. It's just not the case anymore.
Yeah.
And if there is some sort of glitch in society, will they be worth anything?
Right.
That's the question.
Yeah. We interview a very well-respected economist by the name of Alistair MacLeod. He was a former bank president. He's extremely well-followed analyst. And he is predicting that even as soon as the end of this calendar year, we could have a major crisis in our currency system. At that point, if you think about it, if all of your bank accounts and your savings accounts and your CDs and your insurance and your investment accounts or whatever are all in dollars, and if the dollar has a major problem, what are you going to fall back to? What's your plan B in that case? So another thing about that is you mentioned a dollar ain't what it used to be. That is so true. It's mm-hmm. lost. The dollar has lost anywhere from 96 to 98% of its value since the foundation of the Federal Reserve in the year 1913, which happens to be the same year that the federal income tax had to be installed. But anyway, you know, like Motel 6 is called that because it used to be $6 a night, et cetera. You don't have to allow that theft of your earnings and your savings to happen, because that's exactly what's happening when they're printing trillions upon trillions of new currency electronically or physically right now. It's devaluing and diluting the value of every single dollar that you already have earned or saved or have in the bank. But if you get off that roller coaster, get out of that casino and put at least a portion of your money into physical gold or physical silver, you can have it shipped directly to you. I can help people with that at libertyandfinance.com. But the point is, just consider that. Even if you go into a local coin shop, just get something, some real silver or gold. Especially want to suggest people might want to consider that U.S. constitutional currency, the dimes, quarters, and half dollars from 1964 and before, because those are so well-respected and well-recognized. People will know you've got real money. And then you have it in terms of, and if you need it for buying some food at the farmer's market or getting somebody to fix your car or whatever, if the system is down.
Well, from what you said, it also can retain its value and actually increase, right? So instead of you watching your money value drop with the fiat currency, you can see, I mean, I'm seeing gold and silver prices rise. So if you've been holding those, you've actually made money, haven't you?
Oh, yes. It's been the number one asset, performing asset since the year 2000. So this is remarkable. People forget about this, and then they wake up every decade or so when we start another big bull market. And we are in arguably the third or fourth inning of a bull market in gold and silver right now. It's not too late at all to get in now and to make sure that you have at least some physical gold or silver while you still can obtain it, because there's a well-known commentator by the name of Mike Maloney who has rebranded those. He says gold is going to be called unaffordium, and silver is going to be called unobtainium if you wait much longer.
Well, that's a call to action if I've ever heard one. And you know, I want to ask you, I'm going to take another break, but I want to ask what your thoughts are about these gold-based IRAs and mm-hmm. things that instead of just hoping for the best, you can actually maybe set yourself up.
Sure. We'll talk about that.
Awesome. So let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Dunnigan Kaiser. And you know, I'm happy to know that you actually are a resource for people to get set up with gold and silver, because I'm a little late to the party myself, but I started to wake up and smell the coffee when I realized that, you know, it's about my future. And if I go into something that's going to lose its value, it's like worse than a casino, and I'm doing the right thing and you can still end up behind the eight ball. But I had a guest on that said something that was very poignant, and it was like, you should be your own bank. Mm-hmm. And that means you should have the ability to have something of value that you hold and that you can control. And this reminds me of doing the same thing, what you're describing. Is that a way to see it?
Absolutely. It's actually a mind shift back to reality and back to traditional knowledge and back to the wisdom that every generation until the last few generations has known. We've actually been miseducated, and we've just fallen into this modern myth trap of thinking of worthless paper currency as though it had some intrinsic value. It does not. But the currency and what's real money, gold, for example, is to be, you should consider that wealth itself. It's not a representation of wealth. It's not a contract. It's not anybody owes you anything. It is wealth itself in your hand. And I mentioned before about something about the moral implications of that. Before we get to the practical aspects, if we could just talk for a moment, even in scripture, it's considered one of the gravest sins is to deprive a working man of his wages. And it isn't just like, oh, because you cheat somebody. If what the wages are, is you have given up part of your life. You've given up part of your unique and irreplaceable life to devote to building something, doing something, providing, building a good or a service. And and as a way of recognizing that and capturing that value, the proper payment, whether you sell a chair that you made or whether you sell some food that you grew or whether you design something for someone, whatever that good or service is, the payment for that is captured in that way. And if you can put that, hold it in your hand and put it in your pocket, you've just taken part of your life and saved it for the future. So if you have a rainy day, or if you get injured or sick, or heaven forbid, there's a huge depression or recession that shows up and you need to draw on those rainy day funds, that is a savings account. That's a real savings account. All this phony baloney stuff we call savings accounts aren't savings accounts at all. And we don't have time to get into it, but just look into the Dodd-Frank Act of 2010, and you'll find out that after the global financial collapse of 2009 and 2010, they made a new law called Dodd-Frank. It was called the Consumer Protection Act, but that's a misnomer, because what it says is anything you put in the bank is no longer yours. It's an unsecured loan to the bank. You're letting them do whatever they want with it, and you are an unsecured creditor to the bank, which means you stand at the very end of the line if the bank gets into trouble. And there's so many ways they can get into trouble, because all the banks are connected with each other in these huge leverage and derivative ways of investing in each other, that any disruption in that whole spider web between the banks could cause the whole thing to come crashing down like a house of cards, as is predicted by many, many major analysts about that could happen in the next months or year. And when it would, you could be completely left out in the cold. You could lose everything that you have inside the system. And then there's an author by the name of Wayne Jett who wrote about the Great Depression. He said, if you can take the fruits of your labor and put them in your hand and in your pocket, that's correct. That's moral. But if they're forcing you to write it down on a piece of paper so that the banker can put it in his pocket, and then the government can debase it, or the banker can apply fees, or they can restrict your access to it. My wife and I got a card in the mail about a year ago from Capital One, where we had online savings account because we could get a better interest rate. And it said, hey, for your convenience and safety, we're instituting these new limits on transfers and things just to protect you. And we'll change the amounts as we see fit or whatever, but just, it's all for your own good. And we got out of that account as fast as we could, because what they're not calling it is capital controls. They're not saying we're going to put a barrier whenever we feel like it, for whatever reason we feel like necessary, between you and the fruits of your labor that you've set aside for your needs and for your family's future. Okay, so you can get around that by getting physical, real things, whether it's food, we've talked about that, land, mm-hmm. land where you could grow a garden. Talk about that. Some people get a place where they can put down a well, they can get access to water that way. So those are real things. But the ultimate commodity that represents all other commodities, including food, is throughout 6,000 years of human history is gold. And silver is the traditional currency for transacting between every people on a daily basis. So if you can get some gold as a savings account and get some silver as a currency that you could use for bartering or transacting, you'll be miles ahead. Only of all the investment money that's in everything in the world today, only 0.5% is in either gold or silver or the related funds or stocks and that sort of thing. The traditional average is about 4%. And during the peak of the last global financial crisis, it reached 8%. So if we even return from today's 0.5% up to the historical average of like 4%, that represents, you know, anywhere from up to 8-fold increase. And so there simply isn't enough available physical gold and silver in investable form for that right now. So this is another area where you want to be not the last one to the party, and you definitely don't want to wait until the crowd wakes up to that. You want to be an early adopter because you're going to get better availability, you're going to get lower prices, and you're going to have it in your hand and know that no matter what happens, if my bank becomes unavailable or if the dollar locks up or whatever, and there's lots more to say about all that, we don't have time, but just to say, you know, you've got something in your hand that's going to provide you with options you would not have otherwise had to take care of your family.
So I want to actually double down on that question. For those companies who don't send you buy your gold, you buy your silver, but you're getting a certificate instead of the actual physical metal.
Yeah.
Do you recommend that people stay away from those because it's not in your hand? It's still virtual.
It's very, very tricky. There are some companies that are very legitimate, and they do have the physical metal. They don't oversell the number of certificates or shares, and they do have it securely stored in a vault and so on. But even if that represents only a fraction of those companies, because there's others for which that is not the case, even in the best of cases, how would you get access to that if you needed it? What if there's riots? What if the highways are shut down and on and on? What if the shipping isn't happening or there's big delays? Any barrier between you and the things that you need means, that's the old saying with preparedness, is if you don't hold it, you don't own it. So sometimes people find they want a blend of the two. They'll maybe acquire a certain amount of gold and silver to have on hand in their own home, because then there's no barriers between them and it. But they might have a larger amount that they do pay for secure vault storage to protect it and insure it. And that's a fairly reasonable strategy as well. But at least it's prudent to have at least some on hand so that there's no barriers between you and your savings.
That's a good point. And you mentioned land, and that's something that people don't necessarily think about. But that is wealth as well, isn't it? If you have a plot of land and you're right, if it has wells and you can dig and you can create your own border.
Absolutely. That's absolutely. If you think about it, I just interviewed Joel Salatin, the teaching farmer and activist from Polyface Farms. And he said, you know, it's so amazing to him because we've gone through this crazy year through things that have never happened before on the planet Earth, have happened in the past year here, to restricting people's freedoms of movement and everything. Mm-hmm. And he said, life on the farm has been, they've been in a little bubble of happiness. They get up in the morning, the cows still need milking, they feed the chickens, they do dry the grains, and they do these things. He says, then we take our produce to the farmer's market, and they see the people coming out of the cities with the fear in their eyes. He said, I can see the fear in their eyes. And it's like, what a contrast. He's living a life of peacefulness and pastoral joy of being connected to God's creation and the sources of life that come from that. And then he's seeing the desperation in the eyes of people who have lived disconnected from God's creation, in the sense that now they're completely dependent on the just-in-time supply chain and the smooth functioning of a complex modern society and all that goes with it. It's very true what you said.
It's scary for someone, I think, who lives in the city to think, hey, it's all on me and I have to, you know, walk the walk and I have to get up and do But if the society on a city level breaks down, that is a utopia, if you really think about it. And the ability to have your own space where you can be self-sufficient, it's another level of preparedness, I think.
And I take that one step farther. So we did several interviews with Joel Salatin. One of them is called The Self-Contained Home. Another one's called Feeding Your Family on 0 Acres. I'd really encourage people to go to youtube.com/libertyandfinance or youtube.com/reluctantpreppers and check those out. But the next step beyond just your own household is making a network of supportive friends, neighbors, family, because we are made for relationship and we are made for helping each other. And you need to have people who have the variety of skills. Some people are good at growing things. Some people are good at fixing things. Some people are good at building things. Some people are good at taking care of, help understanding children and that sort of thing. We can complementarily help each other much more resiliently than if we just try to go it alone necessarily as an individual family against the world.
It certainly makes it a lot more fun and
right.
easy because you're not having to multitask. I always say that, I'm really blessed because I'm a doctor and I'm a surgeon, so I can fit in with anywhere I need to fit in if it comes down to that. But hopefully.
Yeah, you're always going to be a needed skill set. That's your point. Got it. Yes.
Exactly.
Hey, you have any surgeons yet? Okay, I'm here.
Exactly. We only have a minute left, but I want people to know, how can we reach you? How can we get to your website and listen to your podcast?
Sure. Again, go to youtube.com/libertyandfinance, all one word, or youtube.com/reluctantpreppers. The website is libertyandfinance.com, and you can email me at libertyandfinance@gmail.com, and I'll promise to reply to inquiries. If people want to talk about purchasing gold and silver or getting some to put in storage, they can email me at libertyandfinance@protonmail.com and include their phone number and what time zone they're in. We'll get connected and make sure we understand what their specific situation is, what their needs are, get them the absolute best price available and the best service.
Now, Donegan, I really thank you for coming on. I really enjoy the show, and I'm going to go and listen to a couple of those that you mentioned, because I need to be up on it as well. And my listeners really benefited from this. And it really doesn't matter if the United States or anywhere across the world, this is universal. And thank you for being a resource for all of us. I want to thank you so much for coming on, and I want to thank everybody for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.